and bullet-resistant vest. The target was 100%. We've achieved 100%. You'll see for the financial year, on the far right, 1,756 bulletproof BRVs or bullet-resistant vests were purchased and distributed in the financial year. No further firearms were procured by the province. In terms of the official SAPS firearms being dot pin marked, that's a unique marking so that we can identify all our firearms over and above the serial number over and above the serial number. There's a particular, it's called dot pin marking, it's a certification or a particular stamp of SAPS. We have to dot pin mark all our firearms for identification purposes. We have a total of 22,748 firearms, official firearms in the province, and you can see there they've all been dot pin marked, so they've all met the standard. Certification of firearms and bullet resistant vests. The target is 100%. So on this you'll see that we do biannual certification, which implies that twice a year we have to certify all bullet resistant vests and firearms certified, and it's a control measure to mitigate against particular risks. You'll see there 27,425 BRVs were certified, as well as the 22,748 firearms were certified. In other words, all firearms that are official firearms were certified. In other words, they've been physically seen and verified on the system. That will exclude, obviously, where there are losses that have been registered, because that will then be reflected in what will be benched against that. But all other firearms have been physically inspected and verified and certified on the system. The ratio of personnel to vehicles says that we should have 3.59 vehicles per person. We did not achieve that target. We were at 3.75 vehicles per person. However, just to offset that, you'll see there on the right, we procured 574 new vehicles in that year. 288 vehicles were recommended for boarding. That's, in essence, boarding means destruction or for sale. In this current financial year, just to give you an indication, we were allocated a budget for vehicles of 158 million. And we've already placed, the first order was placed and delivered, and that was a total of 229 vehicles. The second order, I think, has been submitted. And then we obviously await delivery on the balance of those vehicles. But to offset that 3.75 vehicles per person, you can see that we've already ordered an additional 229 vehicles. Then in terms of vehicles available in relation to the total fleet, this is in essence where you've got a certain number of vehicles in the province. This is what is available for policing. In other words, that which is serviceable, if I can call it that. Not in your garages, not broken down mechanical or anything of that nature. In terms of the target, it's a 71% target. We are currently on 89%, which means that 11% of our fleet is in essence not running, which is above the target. And those vehicles are not available for policing due to primarily day-to-day servicing of vehicles, mechanical repairs, and then panel beating. Then with regard to legitimate invoices, scheduled for payment within 14 days of the receipt of complete and correct invoice, we have three targets. The first indicator, or government has set a standard that all suppliers must be paid within 30 days. Provincially, we've set slightly stiffer targets because there are various role players, so we measure them separately. So supply chain, we measure on 14 days to do payment 1 and 2. Finances, we give 7 days to verify and that payment. In other words, it's simply the checks and balances. That's payment 3. And then nationally, they pay the final invoice or the invoice within the 30 days, so we allow them an extra 9-10 days to make the final payment at national. But in terms of what we can manage, within our process, we have 21 days 14 days for finances, I mean for supply chain, for framework 1 and 2, and finances we allow 7 days. You'll see there in terms of a legitimate invoice, this is the supply chain or logistics part. You'll see we've paid 80,124 legitimate invoices. In other words, where there's no problems with the invoice, incorrect billing, incorrect dates, incorrect amounts, based when you compare the order versus the invoice amounts. So we've paid just over 80,000 invoices within the 14 days. Actual expenditure versus ideal expenditure. The target is, and you'll see in the annual financial statements, I indicated that there was an over expenditure of 4.5%. You'll see there, it's reflected there in the red. It was above the target. We spent just around about 40 million over expenditure, which was 882 million. The main cost drivers was around goods and services, where there was a 6.3% overspend, predominantly due to fleet services, travel subsistence, marking of vehicles, and resettlement costs. I think the primary driver around this is around fuel expenditure. We've had an increase in fuel expenditure from roughly about 260 odd million to over plus an additional 46 million. So we're spending about 305, 306 million plus minus on fuel. I think Trigger Peterson will clarify a bit later exact amounts. But we're spending just over 305, 306 million on fuel currently. So, and this is due to the fluctuations in the fuel price. They started at just under 13 rand, and then now at the end of the year they finished on just under 16 rand per litre of petrol. So if you're driving the same number of kilometres throughout the year, you're going to sit with a 15-20% escalation in terms of your expenditure on fuel. And note, we're running a 24/7 service, a critical essential service, so many of our vehicles are running 24/7, and we have roughly about just under 6,000 vehicles. Then in terms of the number of early warning reports, often reports generated, this is in essence, it's to flag expenditure where they are possible red lights or red flags to the various environments or functions. There's been 12 reports generated, and these reports assess, they're utilized by line functions to assess spending, the various patterns, and also then directs management to implement proactive steps to curtail where we are experiencing over expenditure. Then this is the second part. I indicated the first part was the supply chain within 14 days. This is the finances part within 7 days after receipt of a complete correct invoice. You'll see there's 100% that needs to be paid. You can see that they've also met the target, and they've scheduled invoices for payment within 7 days. They've also met the target. The percentage of losses reported within 30 days. You'll see the national target is 92% of losses must be reported within 30 days. We achieved a target of 92.85. Again, here you'll see 345. Of 3,445 of the 3,710 losses were reported within 30 days. We have a loss management system on which all these losses are registered. And this is constantly monitored. And then where there's non-compliance or non-adherence to the registration of those losses within 30 days, then we apply consequence management on, be it on the line functionary or the individual member who has failed to report that loss within 30 days. Just on, and these I'll do a little bit quicker because I think many of these indicators we've achieved on. Within the legal and policy services, where there are instructions to investigate claims dispatched within 14 days upon receipt of letters, this is your civil claims. We've achieved the target. The target was 75%. We achieved the target of 99.7%. and 415 new claims in the financial year. So we received 460 new civil claims in the past financial year, and that has been distributed to the stations, dispatch stations, upon receipt of the letters demanding all letters or some. Then, with regard to the assessing of those merits of the civil claims, there's a target of 80% must be assessed within 90 days of the receipt of the documentation. We'll achieve the target of 90.99, which means 475 of a total 522 claims were assessed within 90 days of receipt. Then, with regard to civil claims again, payments, where there are judgments against us, the target is same as the suppliers. There's an expectation that we satisfy judgments or settlements within 30 days. The national target is 80%. We achieved a target of 98.17%. So in 107 of a total of 109 cases, payments were effected within the 30 days. What we've done in terms of that, our environments have implemented payment registers, which serve as a means to monitor and a means to ensure compliance to that target of 80% judgment settled within 30 days. Then with regard to pending civil claims versus or in comparison to new civil claims received, target is 65%. We achieved a target of 89.3. So you'll see that of the 534 civil claims that were dealt with, 477 were finalized. And these files are audited regularly for transactions, audited regularly, and the transactions are finalized on Polfin. In that manner, we ensure data integrity as well as compliance to the adherence to the targets. Just with regard to the OD and strategic management environment, it's a development of an annual operational plan. I'm going to move fairly quickly through this. There are four quarterly reports, and that has been achieved. It's a means whereby we measure whether we're still on target or meeting our objectives throughout the year. The second one relates to the annual report last year. It relates to last year's one. We tabled to the Standing Committee of Police on the 27th of November of 2018. That was done. Then the Provincial Risk Register. We have one Provincial Risk Register for the province, where we've identified three key strategic risks to the province. And we are piloting the rollout of risk management process to clusters, and then possibly, depending on the ability to do it and the capacity, to even to as far as stations. We conduct the quarterly risk assessments conducted. Four quarterly risk assessments, they've been done. Of the 13 risks I indicated earlier, we have mitigated to a fair degree eight of them. Five of the risks, the 13 risks, are still in progress, and we are currently focusing on strengthening those control measures through compliance inspections, provincial instructions, as well as enhanced commander control. Station risk response plans that have to be verified and signed off. We have 150 station risk response plans addressing all 13 risks. The next one is the stations with the updated THRR, which determines the ideal requirement for personnel. The target has been achieved. These input sheets have all been updated and verified. You'll see there's a slight anomaly. We're talking about 151 input sheets of stations versus 150 stations. The reality is that we, in December, early December, very late November, we established a new fully fledged station Samora Masham, which was previously in the precinct of the younger. So that makes up the extra station, the 151st station, in terms of that target. The number of organizational studies, work studies finalized. The target is 95 that need to be completed in a financial year. 52 or 54 were completed, just over 96%. There's just one more under administration, and then we can take questions, Mr. Honorable Chair. This one relates to our IT environment, and it focuses on the system utilization reports generated. You'll see the target was achieved. We generate 12 monthly system utilization reports, and it covers various corporate systems, all our corporate, as well as our legacy systems. And it generates management information for our line managers. The audits focus on data integrity, and they measure, in essence, the use of all our technological aids, our systems. So it will be ICDMS, CAS, BI, GAGS, EIS, all the various systems which we have that are running in our organization. Then we have line managers, and they, in essence, are provided with these reports. And with these reports, they address identified shortcomings, deficiencies, as well as non-compliance of the members. Honorable Chair, I think that covers Program 1, Administration. So if we want to take...
Thank you so much, Brigadier Forskill. I trust that everyone is more relaxed now, and the heat is gone. It's also Brigadier Forskill's birthday today. And
26.
Age 26 now. So we are... On behalf of the committee, I would wish you a happy birthday, sir. Thank you for being here. We are going to delve into the question part and for comment and input from the committee. And I fully understand, as per the opening remarks of Member Bosman as well as Member Buerta, but I will take a hand around now. I see Member Bosman, Member Barnes, Member Kama, Member Buerta, and Member Christians in that order.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the presentation, and especially since it's your birthday and we almost tried to cook you alive next door. That wasn't the intention, but maybe if you brought cake it would have been easier. I just wanted to find out, Chair, a few questions from my side. My understanding is quite rudimentary. We haven't had time to read the actual document. I just wanted to find out under which of the three programs the forensic lab would fall under. Does that fall under the Western Cape competency? And then did I hear Brigadier correct when he said that the annual financial statements does not include any compensation for employees of the South African Police Service? And then also, what is the budget for the provincial SAPs for crime intelligence? I didn't see that on the financial statements. And then on page 121, the third paragraph from the top, when we talk about compliance of senior managers, including performance agreement, the first sentence in the second paragraph says that senior managers were in compliance, and then the very second sentence says certain individual senior managers could not be in possession of a performance agreement. So we can get an indication of how many senior managers are currently not in possession of a performance agreement, and then also how many incidents of poor performance were assessed, just in terms of the numbers, and perhaps that can come back to the committee as a written response. And then on page 122, there are 24 cases of dishonorable discharge. If we can perhaps just get some context around what would constitute dishonorable discharge. And also perhaps just some context on how many, there's 46 servicemen and women who died. If we can just get an indication of whether that was in the line of duty or not. That's also on page 122, the table there. And then the other question is just an overall question with regards to the report. My assumption is that VISPOL and detective services is a large part of what SAPS does in terms of the mandate of crime prevention. Why is it that that section is the shortest part of the report? If my count is correct, it's only about 40 pages, starting on page 147. So it's sort of the least amount of information, which seems to me is the bulk of what you do. And then in terms of the assets managed by SAPS, what is the upgrade plan in terms of making sure that once a police station scanner reaches its 10-year or 20-year mark, that those are upgraded? Because we visit quite a few police stations, and one of the upgrades that come up is that the equipment is quite old, and that hinders their ability to quickly scan information and make sure that it moves up the ladder. Thank you.
Member Barnes.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not sure why I'm quoting now that I have to speak. Chair, I have a few questions here. Let me start right at the end. Risks were identified here, but we didn't see the risk. And I remember 13 risks. One would like to know, if you're speaking about 13 risks, what exactly are you speaking about? That's my first one. The second question will be on the vehicles received. I know at some slide there, it said 11% of the fleet was not running and 89% was running. Does that fleet that you are currently having address the need that you have to work? That's my second question. The third question is on the posts that were filled, 19,424 out of 21, which I think you fairly reached your target. However, my question is on deployment there. I think my previous member, when he was speaking about visits that we are having. One could not help but pick up on deployment, more especially in rural areas, Chair. You would go into a police station and find a person not speaking that language. For example, I am Xhosa speaking. I grew up in a rural area, dominantly speaking Afrikaans, but you'd find at the station there's Xhosa speaking people that cannot speak to, you know. So now, what I want to know in the deployment, does SAPS consider that sector when they do their deployment? My fourth question, there was spoken about intervention taken on stations with that are not compliant with commanders on performance. In a case like that, what kind of interventions are taken? Could we just get the highlight, because we are not there every day. You would want to know the steps that are taken when there are intervention, or what intervention are there. Number five, 104.56 overspend, excluding overtime on the main category. If you include overtime, what would that run up to if already we have overspent, if there's not even overtime yet in? One would want to have an idea what we are speaking about on that one. My last question would be on the visible policing. Also there, we were given 17 priorities, but we didn't hear what are those priorities. One also want to know what are the 17 priorities that were highlighted by the police there. Let me park now, sorry. Let me park for now. Thank you.
No, thanks, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation. I think, Chair, one frustration that I always have, I think, which I was also sharing with the department most of the time, is that, you know, when we get to this presentation, administratively, you get to see that things are good, targets are met, but on the ground is a totally different story when we get to the situational analysis. So I thought I should just raise that, Chair, but my questions are, I think it's because the two are sitting next to me, and I was writing far from sitting and they've copied, but I want to even at school I used to open my book so that people have the freedom to copy even if it's wrong. I want to get an understanding Firstly, on the issue of the, I think it was on page 26 of the presentation. The difficulty I have here, you see, on the presentation and trying to come to the document. But on the presentation, it was page 26, where you talk about your vehicles that are available for use. Now, I just want to get an understanding, because firstly, you have your past, I don't know whether you said performance or what, for the lack of a better word, but you had an 86%. And then your target was reduced to 71. And you then performed 80-something again. So I just want to get an understanding, what were the reasons for us to actually target a lower, to have a lower target when we could even perform better. The other question that I have is also close to what Member Bans was raising around the, I think it was on page 13 of the presentation, where you talked about the fixed establishment, where you indicated that we had about 19,424 funded posts that were filled. Now I want to get an understanding of what are the challenges, because when we went to Lanesburg Chair, you would get an indication that they have funded posts, but it would last sometimes even for a year. They are waiting for a post to be filled.
Yeah.
What are the challenges there? Because really, we have talked of people saying we don't have enough resources. But again, we have funded posts that were not filling. So for me, I would disagree with, and we should have been at 21,326, so that we know we don't have, we need more. But also in that, I want to get an understanding in terms of, I think she was raising the issue of deployment. I want to get an understanding, because in that, you still have, I know what influences your establishment would be population and whatnot, and your contribution of crime in the area. But I want to understand, how is that monitored then? Because you would have areas that have since grown over the past years, but they still have the same personnel, the same resource allocation. The last question I have is on page, the report is on page 122. Service terminations. I think that's also quite a high number, especially as it relates to resignation. I just wanted to get an understanding as to what informs these, what's the nature? Is it just people who are getting other opportunities somewhere else? But what is the biggest contribution of these 280 that you see? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair Emerson. I'll say to Member Kama now, he has copied me on 122, but that's fine. Thanks for asking it. And I want to welcome the presentation also. And it's the first time for me that SAPS, I sit in front of SAPS. And I must say, Brigadier, I often, and as other women too, drive women alone at awkward times of the night, maybe. And I must commend SAPS that the few times that I have had issues on the road, when I call the 1-0-111, whoever is the police station near to me where I am, responds very quickly. So I commend SAPS for that. I want to come to your report on page 7, your mission, and I want to speak to the mission. And I want to ask for the year under review, if you could speak to the successes and the challenges pertaining to achieving this mission. And then I want to also ask with regards to, and I'm saying now, maybe I should say this, with regards to the officers on the ground, especially because the workforce is on the ground, the morale on the ground, how is the morale? For this year under review, and what was the assistance given? If the morale was very low, what was the assistance given in upping that morale to be that officer of peace and to fight the crime battles on the ground? 122 was already asked by Kama, so I'm not going to go there again, Chair. And I think on 135, with regards to that bullet-resistant vest that were distributed that you are reporting on, I just want to check whether that is still the number that was distributed or any in that number now gone missing. And what is the nature of that, those that have gone amiss? Thank you, Chair.
Any more questions?
Thank you, Chair. Just, I just want to know about, you know, it's one thing if you read in the paper about a policeman and a woman cannot shoot. I don't know if you saw that article, and I'm glad that the Brigadier spoke about pistol clinic. So to assist with the men and women that's not competent in shooting. Tell me the difference that made when it came to competency of handguns and so on. Just another question, and I'm just saying this, that the Premier said that the Western Cape is more under-resourced than other provinces. The ratios that the Premier used was that to one policeman or woman is 509 civilians, people, and then in the other part of the country is one ratio, 1 to 375. If you can just elaborate, is that true? And I'm just talking about, you know, the number of people that you say postal and all that. Is that true? And then also just another question, the money that's given for reservists from the province, 5 million rand of that money is given and is returned back to the province. If you can elaborate on that. So 5 million given to the police to employ police reservists, and that is not that money is returned and not utilized to that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Member Van Vogel? Are you covered?
Yeah.
Thank you. I would, in terms of the forward and the message by the MEC, I am concerned with regard to the assertion with regard to listed by the MEC in the third last paragraph. He states that since my appointment I have observed numerous difficulties with regard to policing, but he makes a statement with regard to caused by poor communication and a strained relationship. If I then flip to page number 8, which is just one over, top page, it's in carrying out our commitment, we shall at all times cooperate with all interested parties in the community and the government at every level. Hence it is concerning that a lack of communication, that's why I'm excited that you are here today. And if you can speak to that, what avenues do exist in that regard? And if I consider the presentation delivered during the PC meeting at the NA, there was 37 cases for fraud and corruption. If you can speak to that one, how many of those has been finalized? But then on page 16, regarding the 17 community reported crimes, even though there's a reduction portrayed, and indulge my question in this regard, if you can elaborate on that, because if there's a reduction in crime and on the street, in the community, we don't feel safe, speaks possibly to the fact that we have people that is losing trust in the jobs. They don't want to report matters anymore. What mechanisms is in place to restore that and to restore confidence? And if I can, we have on page, I also want to ask, seeing that the Ombudsman is here from the Western Cape SAPS regarding the classification of abalone poaching as a more serious crime, is there any, with what is the latest in that regard? Would you be able to shed some light on that? On page 130 as well, and it is listed that there is 151 SAP stations, but there's one, and it says other buildings, 125, which ties into another page I listed with regard to detection of crimes against women and against children, which is below the target. I'm going to find that page now. But in terms of SAPs, how many, if you can explain in simple terms in order to understand, how many of those other buildings would be for FCS purposes? If I go to make a classic example, I go to Athlone, and a person is raped, for example, but a rape kit is not available, even though, according to the president and the minister, it was committed that rape kits will be at all the SAP stations. So where's the FCS for Athlone? Would we be able to get figures and stats on it that it takes X amount of minutes for FCS to get to Athlone? If there's a book, because it's quite disturbing that there's no book, for example, that says that a call was made at 4 o'clock and then at 5 o'clock FCS unit arrived, counseling was provided. If you can speak to give me that understanding, how many of those buildings are for FCS purposes and how many do they cater for? But also, I wrote something. Members, I got a presentation when it was hot off the press yesterday at 12:15. Then on page 165, there's an alarming and I'm not sure if this even speaks to Member Bosman's question. So the percentage of DNA samples taken for Schedule 8 arrests, 165. Oh, okay. Are we still getting there?
Yeah.
Okay. That 8%. Okay.
That
so we will. Okay. So that is all for now, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The 250 questions I will start answering. It's my birthday present. Thank you very much. If I can ask, I will cover as many of them as I can. Then what I'll do is I'll ask the rest of the SAPS delegation to respond as well. And then if there are any questions which we are unable to cover, if it will be acceptable, then we will respond to it in writing. If that's acceptable, then myself and Wasim will just have an engagement. Thank you. Okay, I think some of the, if I will go first, some of the questions around the programs, the FSL, the Forensic Science Laboratory. So I think that one I'm going to join with this, the crime intelligence one. So no, they are national competency. So you will see they are not covered within our presentation. Nor the CI budget will be disclosed or covered in our budget because it's a national competency. It doesn't fall within the realm of the provincial budget. The FSL is the same thing. They're part of a national competency. You will not find a forensic science laboratory in every province. I think we've got maybe five in the country. Typically Western Cape will serve Western Cape and Eastern Cape, and I think parts of Northern Cape as well, they serve as well. So it's a national competency. Then in terms of the question with regard to compensation, the compensation budget is not included in the presentation. Again, SAPS is a national department, so our compensation budget is managed nationally. What you see here is straightforward operational budget. In terms of the economic classifications, it will be overtime, goods and services, and then your capital expenditure. That's it. regard to, okay, let me see. I'm going to choose the ones that I can follow quickly. With regard to the Lanesburg, typically there was an issue with regard to Lanesburg, the funded posts. So what we'll experience is that, and you asked, so why are posts not filled? And I think, yes, part of the challenge is that it takes 9 months to a year to put a policeman on the street. So you'll see that our recruitment has commenced for next year. It's commencing now. And they will go to college in February, and perhaps we'll see them end of December. It's like the group that's in now, that 1,260. It's not, so the planning has to be so much further in advance. So you'll see 1,217 are in college now, 1,200. And we'll only see them, and they've gone in March already. We'll only see them December. So there is a lag in terms of our ability. Someone could resign today. There's not a ready-made policeman that's available to go into that post today. Someone could retire tomorrow, could pass away the day after. There isn't a ready-made policeman. It takes us 9 months to a year to put someone back into that position or on the street again. Then there was a question with regard to risks. And we've got the 13 risks, so there's numerous risks, and you'll see some of them we're touching on in the presentation. They're still to come, because many of our risks are more, to be fair, in the operational space. It's risks with regard to losses of firearms, detention management, deaths in custody, these kind of issues, docket management, misconduct. We tend to focus on our strategic risks more in the operational space. Loss of firearms, these are the kind of key risks that we're referring to. Then, let me see, with regard to the, those that, there's a question with regard to the deaths, the 46 that died, so those are predominantly natural causes. However, you'll see later in the presentation I'll cover, there's nine that were murdered. I think eight off duty. And then one was killed on duty. Katoi from Kailicha was killed on duty on the 9th, I think, of April last year. So, but it's predominantly natural causes. And I think 46 may seem like a fair large figure, but there's almost 20,000 people. So I think it's something you do find. With regard to the 104% overspend, are you going to cover that? It doesn't matter. But the overtime budget, there is a separate overtime budget which is allocated of about 28-29 million, and it was basically spent what we received in terms of the allocation. So the figure didn't really change dramatically in terms of the 104%. Basically the same, because the expenditure was met. There's a question with regard to targets, and a fair question with why a higher target. So you'll see, again, we are national competency. So at times we get, there are certain targets which we as a province are able to set, and then there are certain targets which are targets set for the entire country. So you'll go to each province and you'll find they will have a similar target, because it's a national direction, like typically the 98% in terms of the fixed establishment. Every province will have that same target. In terms of the availability of vehicles, every province will have that same target. So you'll see that's why the target appears lower, although we're performing at a higher standard already the previous year. But those are just the national norms or targets that have been indicated. So the question with regard to the same resource allocation and where areas grow over periods of years, and I think that's a reality. We saw in, I think it's in Iyanga, the specific settlements, the Ramaphosa settlement, there's a Malema settlement where you're having 2,000-3,000 structures that are now being built that were not there 7-8 months ago, up against the railway line. They were not there years ago. And I think we've tried to stay ahead around the allocation of resources, so that's why you update that theoretical human resource requirement is updated yearly to take cognizance of the increases in population, the increases in crime. That's why you'll see one of the reasons is Samora Machel was built. Because if you remember previously, Samora Machel was in the precinct of Nayanga. So now you're having Nayanga has got roughly about 360 people. And you've got Samora Machel with just over 100. So there's 100 additional people in the broader Nayanga precinct as an example. And the challenge is to stay ahead of it. Again, you have a workforce which comes in once a year in terms of your entry level constables, and you have to take cognizance of those kind of developments, which you are doing. Section 12.3 compels or allows the provincial commissioner to, within a geographic area, determine how many resources there are, so he can move people irrespective of whether he thinks our resource plan says there should be 50 people. He can put 100. It's his discretion. And obviously, there's not unfettered discretion. There has to be reasoning behind it. But with that, we do taking cognizance of our crime patterns and crime threats. Let me see. Ms. Lindbergh, resource allocation, service determinations. I think the assistance given to people on the ground, there was a slide. You can blame the Honourable Chair for pushing me to jump over some of the slides, but there is a particular slide where I've covered the issues around the trauma, the debriefing, the referrals for counselling. So there's about, I think in this past year, just under 5,000, I can't remember, 4,900 referrals, either for debriefing or for counselling that have been referred to, because they're often dealing with very traumatic exercises or incidents. So we prefer for debriefing. We have an EHW, Employee Health and Wellness capacity, that at times is stretched, because we're dealing with professional people, so you're dealing with psychologists, social workers, forensic social workers, which is, as you're well aware, is a specialist and a scarce commodity. And you're competing with people that are paying OSD. So it is a capacity we have, and they provide structured programs. You'll see in the one or two of the indicators that I've unfortunately had to skip, you'll see there are various programs that they've conducted and reached out to over 70. So all the establishment, including the in the entire province, I think 73% of all employees have been reached through one or other program. And then there are specific issues around debriefing and counselling, where about 4,900, 4,800 people have been referred. But 73% of our people have been touched or reached through one or other EHW program. Let me see, target service. The issue with regard to, currently with regard to bullet resistant vests that have been lost, I unfortunately don't have that figure with me. We can definitely provide that figure. If we're single, just you gonna make a note. Thank you. The Pistol Clinic Institute, I think Mr. Christian's asked that question. I think it's something we started a couple of years ago. So we're using, at the Pistol Clinics, we're also using some of the more proficient members, the awareness members, to assist with it. So it is successful. We're finding, because I think it's over 3 or 5 days, so you are finding that, but it's, so instead of them simply going to the range and shooting, they do like a prep. I think it's 3 days.
Yeah.
3 days. And it has been successful. The people are essentially getting through that. I don't have the exact numbers, but it is successful. The reservists, 5 million. So we had an engagement with the docs probably September last year where this was initiated. It was initiated between the two departments. There was a discussion around it, and I think the reality is we presented around the issue to the previous premier, as well as to the latest Premier Windy at the last briefing that we did, and we discussed the issue around the reserves that we are in a process. So it's not that we never had the money. It was an offer from Department of Community Safety, but there were certain challenges in terms of the legality of it and whether the money had to go via an acquisition. It's not that one department, you can't just write a check and give it to like a bank manager. There's issues around national treasury. Can we accept it? How do we pay? What is the process? What is the legal obligation or obligations going to be on us if there are issues around payment, etc. And these are issues we have to clarify as a national organization. So we are in a process. We've given the undertaking at the last cabinet briefing that we need to engage more aggressively around it, and it is something that we are open to, because we see the value in terms of not necessarily the 5 million, but any assistance being given to put more reserves out on the street, because obviously everyone has a limited budget, and the offer was appreciated. The one of fraud and corruption, I'm not 100% sure. We'll have to get back to you on that. So just select fraud and corruption. Okay, while I look at this, is there anything Thank you,
Chair. There was the one question regarding the abalone poaching and the classification of that. Our head office did go through a complete consultation process with internal and external role players to look at the classification of our crime code to refine it a bit more. So there was a draft document submitted, and it also includes abalone poaching as one of the serious priority crimes. That was submitted to our legal department, who are actually busy refining and making sure that everything is in line with the law, and whereafter it will be implemented. So there is definitely progress in terms of that.
And just to add on to that, I think when it comes to abalone poaching, if it's of an organized nature, which in many cases is, then it is considered a serious offense. Thanks.
Under resourcing to other provinces.
So the figures around police to population ratio, I don't have with me immediately. I think this is partially the challenge around it. So I want to indicate that one has to add and take all personnel into account. So we've got many people in units that don't serve a particular station. So police to population ratio, I will have to confirm exactly what the amounts are, and I don't want to speculate what other provinces have in terms of the establishment. I couldn't tell you offhand what the ratios are.
Members, are you covered? I see Member Postman, Member Paz, and Member Buddha.
Chair, perhaps if I could just get an answer on the context around the 24 dishonorable discharge police officers, as well as the plan, asset upgrade plan for police stations and upgrading scanners and computers, as well as the questions around the percentage of the number of police senior managers currently not in possession of their performance agreements specifically for this year in the review. And then also the second part of that on page 121 is how many incidences of poor performance have there been in terms of not complying with the prescripts. And then I just have a follow-up with regards to the answer around the forensic lab capacity. So I understand that it's a national competency and it's not part of the provincial budget, but under which management structure does that fall? So do the forensic lab in, I think it's in Plattekloof or somewhere there. Do they report to the National Police Commissioner directly, and all the staff at that facility, they report to someone nationally, and there's no oversight in terms of the provincial senior management here? And if that is the case, if we could perhaps get an understanding of the number of rape and other crimes in need of forensic intervention in this province, how many have been successfully completed, and how does it compare to the previous year, or do you not keep those statistics here?
Member Barnes?
Thank you, Chair. I'm doing a follow-up. I have two unanswered questions. The first one was on the deployment of police officers in terms of the language barrier, how deployment is happening. My second question that was not answered was the one I asked of the intervention taken out of stations with, which are non-compliant commanders on the performance topic. I didn't, at some stations, what kind of intervention taken out of stations with non-compliant commanders? There was a section that spoke about non-compliant commanders and interventions are taken. Now what I want to know is what kind of interventions are taken on that. Those are my two questions unanswered. Are we allowed to ask new questions?
Okay.
Member Boita?
Okay.
Yes, just mine wasn't answered on the mission and then on the and on the morale of officers.
Thank you. And then the one regarding the FCS, for an understanding on how that actually works. Yeah, okay.
Chair, I must just say that we must give the Brigadier a chance to also celebrate his birthday, so let's not hold him yet.
Okay. So let me start with the FCS one first. That's the one I remember. So the FCS, we've got 26 units. We've got 26 units in the province, and they're scattered. So the challenge is, with regard to your question, so some will be based at stations, in the physical police station, and others will be based at either a cluster office or in a rented or leased building. So it differs from place to place. That's why it refers to other buildings. It doesn't only refer to FCS, it refers to other specialized units. So they often share premises. Some are based in local police stations if there's an availability of space. Others will be based at cluster offices. Okay. With regard to interventions, the question around interventions, what kind of interventions, it will differ. In terms of poor performance, it can be either straightforward disciplinary. It can be issues around remedial. It can be training, so you could identify that based on a particular intervention is a requirement, a member or a commander may require a particular course or is lacking a particular skill, and you may overcome it via a training intervention. In another case, it may simply be due to non-compliance, right? Failure to adhere to an instruction. And then it will not simply, that intervention may be of a more negative manner or more negative discipline, where it may be, someone may be charged for non-compliance to a particular issue. With regard to the issue of language, yes, I think it is taken into account. I think the challenge is that we also strive to integrate. So we do not have any police stations where we only have Khoisan-speaking people. We don't have any really just Afrikaans-speaking or any English-speaking members. We attempt as far as possible to integrate. So they should be, and again, we don't have one or two people at the station. I think the smallest station we have is probably 45, roughly, but no, probably at least around about 40 people. So there's a variety of people that will speak, a number of people that will speak from different backgrounds, that will speak a number of languages. So as far as possible, we are microcosm of society. So we don't have one language for a particular area. I mean, logically, you want to have people speaking a particular language which is prevalent in an area, but we have replaced people based on not only on language, it's around, because again, many of the entry-level constables that come into our communities or that come into our police service come from particular communities, and it's not as easy as sending someone from place X to place Y. So we also look at those kind of humanitarian issues around where we place our people. The morale of officers. I think I would say it's slightly subjective, but it's I don't think there's necessarily an issue around morale in the service. I think currently the broader SAPS is we are going through a process of reorganization. Our crime levels, and we've agreed, you'll see it coming up. We have unacceptably high levels in certain crime categories that we are attempting to address. And obviously, there's a consequence in terms of our members and the strain that they take. So and the pressure that they're under. And yes, you can see there are resignations. And that is an indicator of I think there's probably about of the service terminations, probably about 50% of our members we've lost through resignations. So besides the deaths, which are natural, it's about roughly about 50%. 560, yeah, roughly about 50% resignations. And that's a combination. Someone else asked the question of why. It's better job opportunities. Issues around stress, issues around working conditions, because it's tough to be a police officer. I think there can be no doubt that it's one of the most trying and complex and demanding jobs, because you can be working 24/7. You have the ombudsman, he's very relaxed now because he was working a 20-hour week, a 20-hour day, and that's what's often demanded. So there's a huge demand being placed on police officers at all levels, and often our police officers are not the most well rewarded or even well resourced. So it's we'll see. So there we go. So so the morale is but it's an ongoing thing, and that's typically why we have that kind of debriefing, that kind of EHW, employee assistance programs, running constantly. Because we're cognizant of it. FCS, morale of officers. The mission. Your question related to the mission.
Edmond, if you allow me, Che, for you to speak to the successes and the challenges in achieving your mission.
Jay, may I ask, we're going to come to some of that in terms of the operational policing, because that speaks to the prevention investigation of crime. So that will, I think we will cover that in the section. There was one or two, the fraud and corruption one we said we'll do later. Was that covered? Please let that be all. Follow up.
No follow up, just answers.
Okay, sorry. Yep.
So it's the answers on page 121 around how many senior managers are not in possession of a performance management agreement, as well as the 24 dishonorable discharges, context on what that would constitute.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so all senior managers are in possession of performance agreements. You'll see there was 51. Of the 51, I think the 48, which is, were not and or be assessed. I must follow up on that. I think that I'm not sure if there was possibly a service termination in that period. We'll have to confirm that for you. But all 51 in terms of the system has been. You'll see there on the second assessment is 48. Mm-hmm. It moves from 51 to 48. And I think that could be where there are possibly interim service terminations within that period. So they couldn't be assessed. So let's say, for instance, the assessment period runs from October to March. Right? But the assessment will be done after April, right? But he leaves in May. So we have the three, Hendrik Burger, and some of those people leaving. So that's where the difference in the number comes from, in terms of the senior management. The next one. The dishonorable discharges, that will be in most cases where they are criminal cases. The nature of those cases or those discharges, we can obviously give you the detail in terms of the 24, but that will be there where there is a criminal charge in most cases at all. Yeah. So we'll see making a list of those, we can give you in the detail of
I'm going to be short. I'm backing every question. I'm going to put a comment now.
Mm.
And I'm making peace with my question. I think I want to be on the same page with Brigadier when we are speaking about the language bearer. When I speak of the language bearer, I'm specifically referring to your CSC when you enter into the police station. I think I've had 4 or 5 encounters where people are not able to express themselves in their own language. I wouldn't want Brigadier to respond to that.
Okay.
What I would want rather is for them to look into that, because that's a real factor. I found myself being an interpreter more than 4 or 5 times, reaching a CSE, coming for my own duties. So I would want SAPS to look into that. I thank you, Chair.
Member Van Pochel?
Chair, just a point of clarity. I'm not sure if your question was answered. Poor communication between the department and the MEC's office. I didn't hear that part.
Honourable Chair, I would prefer not to comment on that because I did not make the statement. I think it emanates from a different source, so I don't think we should comment on it. If anything, they should clarify the statement. Thank you.
What I will do now, in order for time, I am totally aware that this is our first engagement, and like I said previously, we do appreciate that you are here. It's now 4:20. I'm going to allow the Brigadier to provide us a broad, quick overview of presentation 1, 2 and 3 with regard to verse 4 and detectives. And then we will try to wrap up at 5 accordingly. So if we can do it in between 20 and 25 minutes, we are going to then take resolutions and move forward, because we are surely going to see each other a lot, sir.
May I propose that I'll focus on where the performance indicators are not met, and then one or two, if I can say, more important or critical indicators, if that's okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Okay, then the second program is visible policing. It's page 147, and the tables are 152. Remember the summary again? So there's 54 performance indicators, actually more than in the administration. So not necessarily the number of pages, but it's got more indicators. 54. And then you've got 32 indicators that were met, targets were met, 16 were not met, and 6 where there's an improvement, but not meeting the target. I'm going to skip this. Okay. So the number of reported serious crime. This reflects on the total number of serious crime. There are 4 primary categories of serious crime. It's your contact crime, which is your murder, attempted murder, your robberies, your assaults, your rape. And then it's your contact related, which is your malicious damage to property, your arson. Then it's your property-related crime, which we all know that what it is. It's your theft of motor vehicle, theft out of motor vehicle, housebreaking, etc., 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 stock theft. And then it's your other serious crime, which is things like shoplifting, fraud, commercial crime. That makes up your 17 broad categories. So the reported serious crime, the 17 community reported crime, you'll see on the far left the total number of these crimes reported last year. was 345211. The target was 337927. There was a result of 339845. You'll see it's amber, simply because it's lower than what it was last year, but it didn't meet the target. Just to note that over the last 4 years, we've reduced from about roughly about 380,000 reported serious crimes to where we are now, to about 339, about 375 to 339. It's about a 35,000-36,000 counts less than what it was 4 years ago. However, and this is, so here's the reality is, we have, in that broad 17 categories, there are particular problems, which are around murder, attempts, assault common, assault GBH, stock theft, arson, fraud. These are, if I can put it in terms of, not crimes of fear, these are the contact crimes which are problematic. Murder, attempts, assault common, assault GBH. In terms of volumes, but in also in terms of increases. The second one relates to reported crimes against women and children. That's just against women. The total number, you will see it was 34971 the previous year. You'll see it again, amber, 34,776. Again, there is a reduction of 195 counts from the previous year, but it didn't meet the target of a 2% reduction. I think one of the challenges in this space is that the issues around gender-based violence and other initiatives, awareness programs around crimes against women and children, as can encourage reporting. And obviously, you may see a spike in terms of the levels of reporting, and that's what you'd want to see. The crimes reported against children, here we've had an increase from 9454 to 9473. The target has not been achieved. There's actually been an increase of 0.2% or 19 counts when compared to the previous year. There has been an overall decrease from 2015-2016 by 3.9%, but in the last year there were an additional 19 counts. Again, I would like to say that the same thing around the gender-based violence and violence against children can often can result in greater levels of awareness, greater reporting, which is in essence what the South African Police Service would like to see. Around contact crimes, this is the categories I've said. It's murder, attempted murder, robbery aggravated, your assaults and your sexual offences. This category increased by 1,035 counts in the last year. We have identified particular generators of these crimes. You'll see I've listed them shortly. Firearms, liquor, drugs, persons of interest. In other words, when we say persons of interest, it's individuals that are simply problematic in your communities, for the lack of a better term, but they're simply problematic. And then we have challenges around environmental design. So these are the key generators that we've added that are contributing to these levels, specifically around contact crime. Contact-related crime, this is your MI2P or your malicious damage to property, and then your arson. There was an increase of 694 counts in this category. There's been a steady increase from 2011, stabilized since 2016, but currently it's still above the target was not reached in the past financial year. And this is impacted on predominantly by one service delivery protest, where you have vast numbers of malicious damage to property cases being opened, the student protests, which we've had over the last period, land invasions and evictions, which impact predominantly on these contact-related crimes. Trio crime. These are crimes which are typically your house robbery, business robbery, and your carjacking. It decreased by 3.9% in the last year. So your business house, business robbery, house robberies, and your carjacking decreased in the last financial year. Since the 2 year crimes, and it's the first time since 2010 that we've seen a little bit of a decrease in your contact crimes. It did not meet the target. The target was a very stiff target. It should have dropped by almost 2,500-3,000 cases. It dropped, but it was only by about 270 counts less than the previous year. Property related crimes, and this we've seen over the last 3-4 years, we've experienced a constant decrease in this category. You'll see here, decreased again this past financial year by 5.64%, 5,504 counts, and this is typically your theft of motor vehicle, theft out of motor vehicle, burglary residential, burglary business, your stock theft. We've experienced very good decreases, and it's for the third, fourth, fifth year. You'll see also the insurance industry will attend to the fact that we've experienced vast decreases in terms of the theft of motor vehicles in the Western Cape. I think the issues around our CPFs, the partnerships around with neighborhood watches, with CPFs, and then also private security companies, that resulted in positive results in this category as well. Other serious crime, you'll see it's amber. This is your shoplifting, your fraud. And I think here we've experienced a slight decrease. It however is a problem within that category. Commercial crime remains problematic. And reality is with the amount of commercial crime being committed via the internet, via the use or with the use of technology, it's become extremely problematic. And the reality is that in many cases the end users or the users, the victims, it's through negligence and the lack of know-how that they are succumbing or being caught with these in terms of these issues. The percentage of arrests in relation to reported contact crimes. So currently our province is very target driven. So we demand arrests from all our members. It's one of the tools or mechanisms by which we ensure productivity and work performance. So we are extremely focused around making arrests. I think with regard to contact crime, you'll see there for the past year on the 17 community reported crimes, we made about 118,000 arrests, roughly, give or take a couple. 118,000 arrests. With regard to all arrests, for all offences over and above the 70 community reported crimes, we're probably in the region of about 430,000-440,000 arrests we're making in a financial year. So we make roughly about 30,000 to 35,000 arrests per month. We set, and this was a new indicator, we set specific targets. So this is a Western Cape initiative. We set targets for contact crime, where we want to see, because that's the crimes up here. That's where you want to see the most arrests being made. It's on the murders, attempted murders, the robberies. That's where the tacky hits the ground. And we set a target initially of 60%. We achieved 53%. It's something we were not 100% happy with. It equated to about 6,149 arrests. And we've issued provincial instructions, guidelines, to members, to stations, to reorientate them, our members, to focus on repeat offenders, and persons of interest in specific problematic crime categories. We've analyzed our stats. We know there are people that are committing 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 times. We are arresting the same person for the same type of offense. So we are, I want to say we are hunting them, and not say, but we are reorientating, we're prioritizing those categories of individuals, because it's not that everyone in our community is a criminal. It's that we've got the same people perpetuating the same offense constantly. So that's where we're trying to reorientate in terms of, that's why we say contact crimes, specific crimes. We want to hunt specific repeat offenders, specific problematic individuals, or what you call those persons of interest that I alluded to earlier. In relation to reported property-related crimes, again, there was a new indicator. We set a target of 20%, so we want to see the split 60%, 20%, and 20% on the other. It was not achieved. We got to 13% of the report counts, just over 16,233 arrests were affected. And we've also, again, reorientated around that, because many of your property-related suspects, we are able to link, unlike in other cases, but in the property-related crimes, one of the key technological investigative aids, let me put it that way, is fingerprints. So, again, we've analyzed it, and we're working now on lists of individuals that we've linked to specific cases via fingerprints. Because I can find your fingerprints in a vehicle once. When I find it five times in different vehicles, in different cases, then it's in all probability going to be you that is breaking into the car or stealing the vehicle. The same thing with the house. If you find my fingerprints on one, it doesn't necessarily say anything. But if I find your fingerprints in eight houses, you are very unlucky. Or it's you that is perpetuating or committing that crime. So we're focusing on those where we are linking multiple suspects on multiple scenes. Okay. In relation to the contact-related and other serious crimes, 34% of the counts reported 42,427 arrests. And I think these are the issues around shoplifting and fraud. One of the key things is the number of arrests for shoplifting has also increased. So that's contributed to us meeting that target to a degree. Crimes for unlawful dealing in drugs. The target has been achieved. Stations have conducted a number of operations, 252A operations, which are traps, to address the scourge of drugs. And we've also set weekly targets. One of the ways we've achieved it, we set weekly targets for each station throughout the province. So every station has a target that they have to achieve. And then obviously if you work it out in that fashion, each station, and then they contribute to the overall provincial picture. I'm trying to go through some of them. Okay. So a target we did not meet, and I think it's important that I stop on this one, is the unlawful possession of drugs. You'll see that the figures dropped quite dramatically. In terms of that, it dropped by about 31.8%. You'll see the explanation. There was a constitutional court judgment on the 18th of September last year, which spoke to the cultivation and possession of cannabis, and that had a negative impact on the volume of arrests. So therefore possession of dacha in small quantities was no longer prohibited. Then with regard to drug premises search, again, we are very target driven. So we have weekly performance targets. You'll see the target has been met. We know where each and every drug premises is. So we set specific targets to search those premises. You'll see them. Also important to note, the number of drug premises have decreased in the last 2 years. So we've moved from a position of 1,905 to currently, at the start of the last financial year, we'll be sitting on 1,705 drug premises. And I'm trying to... then with regard to 252A operations, conducted for drugs and liquor. We've got weekly performance targets for each premises, and for each station, and therefore you'll see we've achieved on that target. I'm trying to get through to some of them. Okay. Then with a number of crimes for illegal dealing in liquor. So again, the focus has not been on possession. We're trying to move to more towards the to deal with the higher with people higher up in the value chain. So we're focusing on dealing cases with regard to liquor. We did not meet the target, and I think a couple of the issues around that is the others have their own network, and to close a illegal premises, it doesn't require one police officer. It requires a number. And the moment a premises is raided, the others stop trading. So it's, you can eat simultaneously, but you have limited numbers of people. You can't have 20 at one, 20 when there's 100. So it's not possible, and therefore the others simply stop trading when they know there's raids occurring at the shipping or the illegal premises. And then also, what we have seen is, and the positive to that is, the number of illegal establishments has seen a drop. We've dropped from 2833 in the last financial year to 2269 at the end of the last financial year. So there's been a decrease of roughly about 700 and 600 and 580, roughly. Searches at illegal liquor premises. You'll see the target was 13,614, and again, this is one of the, and why I'm focusing on this is because this is one of our key generators, especially around a contact crime. We've set provincial instructions for all police stations, and again, as I've indicated, those illegal premises have dropped by about 580. Okay, liquor premises closed. This is where we've identified liquor premises, but and it's closed and closed permanently. So the reality is some reopen, but these are closed permanently, charged and closed. We've moved from 6831, we are now on 4658. I think the permanent closure of liquor premises, illegal premises, is a challenge. And the reality is that in many cases, if the offenders go to court, they receive an AG. So they pay an admission of guilt fine. And then they're back in business. Yeah. Liquor-related compliance inspections. There's continuous operations and compliance inspections, and we have each station has a performance target based on the number of outlets that they have. Okay, let me go to the next one. Lost, stolen, illegal firearms recovered. And this is one of the key generators and where we are facing a challenge. Even though we have intelligence-led operations targeting firearms, illegal firearms, and we are prioritizing that, we have a high number of operations being executed. However, the recoveries have declined. So we've seen roughly about 500 less firearms recovered in this past financial year than in the previous, probably about 400 less than in the previous financial year. So there is a decrease in terms of the recoveries. Within our organization itself, SAPS own firearms. The previous financial year, we lost or had robbed 65 firearms. There was a target set of roughly about 10% reduction. We achieved 40. So in the past financial year, we lost 40 firearms. We have pretty effective control measures currently in place to reduce firearm losses. I think the reality is, when we did the analysis of where we lost the firearms, we lost 7 from the 107s. That's the firearm inventories. That's in the broader station. And then 33 were 108 firearms. That's on your personal inventory. That's allocated to one individual person. And then 7 were broadly within the station precinct. In most cases, they were within the CSC. These one of the key control measures, we've got a couple, that all firearms have to be certified biennially, inspected, verified, captured. And then the daily on and off duty parades are also used to carry out those inspections, where the member has to present his firearm for inspection at the parade. In terms of the number of identified SAPs on firearms recovered, for this past year, we recovered 26 firearms. The loss of the SAPs firearms, and as I indicated, is one of the provincial risks. We've placed a greater focus through putting it on the risk register as a focus area. In the past year, of that 40 that we lost, we recovered 19. And then the further 7 we recovered were from previous financial years. But of the 40 which we lost here, we've confirmed 19 that of that 40 that we recovered. Compliance inspection of firearm dealers. I think this is quite key, because one of the areas, and at times one would think that the issue around compliance at firearm dealers is not necessarily the most important thing. But we've definitely picked up that this is one of the key challenges in environments where there's a lack of control over firearms. And so we've stepped up the compliance inspections. You can see in terms of the volumes undertaken by our designated firearm officers, as well as our flash environment, inspecting the inventories of dealers and verifying records and transactions, including ammunition. And then the other one, so the two issues around compliance in terms of the firearm space, remember, it's a key generator of our crime, of our crimes of fear. The compliance inspections at security companies is another issue. You'll see there's a relatively big spike also in terms of the compliance inspections at security companies. When I say security companies, I'm talking about security companies specifically that have firearms and to order their firearms, as well as the permits that they carry. So, I mean, these two categories, you can see there's a strong spike, because it's the issue around the generation or generators of crimes, of contact crime, where firearms involved, and we are attempting to mitigate the possible risks with firearms in these quantities in both the security industry as well as at firearm dealers. I'm trying to go as quick as possible. stolen robbed vehicle, you'll see there was a target of 5 to 85. It's dropped to 5 or 6 5. I think one of the key issues is that the number of vehicles being stolen over years has decreased. So you'll see consequently less recoveries that has taken place. I'm going to skip firearm applications. There's nothing really there. Victim friendly. Okay. Just in terms of our victim friendly services. We've got all 151 stations are compliant with the minimum criteria for victim-friendly services at police stations. So in essence, the criteria that we can measure against, you must have 2 of the 3 criteria to be seen as compliant. In other words, 50% of the operational members must be trained in providing a victim-friendly service. You must have a victim-friendly room or the ability to, in close proximity, to have that kind of facility. And there must be a station order, which is like a station instruction, which gives guidance or direction to management on how to deal with the victim-friendly services. We have 2 of those 3 to meet it, and all 150 stations have 2 of those 3. I'm going to skip the others. Okay. Alpha complaints. So of our 3 categories of complaints, our alpha complaints are what you'd call your serious complaints. There's a slight decrease in terms of the response time. It was previously 15.26. The standard is 15.26. We achieved 15.32, which was 6 seconds up. In reality, that's not acceptable. So a standing operating procedure has been developed for all 10111 and other stations. What we've done is we've trained the system users at 10111, and the CSC have received on-the-job training, and there's an incident management functionality that's going to prompt users where there's been long outstanding complaints. So what they're going to have to do, they have to then intervene, and that's going to impact on the overall alpha complaints reaction time. Bravo, I'm not going to admit. I know there's a problem. Okay. Escape from custody. So this is where the person has been arrested. He may not be in a prison cell. He's just under arrest. He may be in the van. He may have been handcuffed, etc. He may be in the cell. You'll see there the number of incidents reduced from 102 to 94 for the financial year. It did not meet the target. There was supposed to be a 10% reduction. It didn't meet the target, but there was a reduction based from the previous year. Okay. Then the total number of escapees in those 94 incidents. The previous year was 128. The 2018 financial year, we had a total of 98. So it came down from 128 to 98. It dropped by about 30. Of the 98, 81 escapees were rearrested, and 40 were rearrested within 24 hours. So we had 98, 81 escapees rearrested, 40 within the first 24 hours. There are control measures. There are plans running with regard to this, and you can see there's actually tangible results with regard to the reduction. Where there's specific areas of non-compliance in terms of where suspects are not handcuffed, etc., etc., consequence management is being applied, and you'll see that now. Deaths in police custody. The previous year we had 12. The current year, or the current reporting period, we had 16. Of the 16, the breakdown, we had 4 due to natural causes, 10 deaths due to suicides, and 2 due to injuries sustained prior to arrest. That covers the 16. IPED have investigated all those deaths in custody, and they've made recommendations that have to be implemented. Then, where we've had disciplinary action taken in escapes, so on those 94 incidents, there were 140 members that were possibly implicated in those escapes. And that's not necessarily that they were implicated in aiding. It could be issues around non-compliance to instructions, etc., etc. Of those 140, the outcome of that disciplinary action, 74 were found guilty, and then they received various sanctions. Not guilty were 29. Pending, in other words, those cases are still being investigated, it's 21, and where they were not found to be where there could be no steps instituted against them, it's a total of 16. Okay, I'm going to skip. Police members murdered in the province. Previous year we had 6. We wanted to reduce it. About 5. This past year we had 9. I think the reality is we had one member killed on duty, Katoi from Kailicha, responding to complaint. I think it was the 9th of April, as I indicated. The other 8 were killed off duty, and I think that's in essence probably the most difficult thing, because even though you may have a police safety plan, members are made aware, you are unable to manage and predict and control what people do in their private lives. So the 8 were killed off duty. The attacks on police members, I think one of the most pleasing aspects around this one is that there's been a reduction of attacks on police members. We moved from a position of where we had 800, just over 800 attacks on police members, to a total of 555 in the past financial year. Again, 74 of those incidents occurred on duty, and 481 of those occurred off duty.
Try and just go through. How much time do we have? Can I go to detectives?
Members?
Oh. And then we take questions.
Members? Two Brigadier Forskel. We are 7 minutes away from 5 o'clock. As you've noted today on the order paper, the report was tabled accordingly. We do have opportunity within the next quarter, within the new year, to also engage the South African Police Service and the management. We could potentially end and conclude today's meeting. The presentations, according to Brigadier, will be made available via Wasim, and we have our parliamentary privileges regarding questions, if I can get an understanding from you at this stage. Bota.
Chi, do you want an understanding where I want to ask a question? Then I want to.
Okay. So we will take questions for now based on...
Member Bota? Member Bota?
Chair, can I propose speaking on behalf of Member Bota that they take some questions now, we pause the rest of the presentation so that gets sent to us, and we perhaps set a date now for when we want to meet in the first quarter. Because we already know what we're doing up until April next year.
Members, any comment from... So Member Bota and Member Bosman.
Thank you, Chair. At least it leaves the Brigadier 1 hour to celebrate. We are here until 11. Chair, I just want to understand from the Brigadier that some of the performance indicators are measured in percentage and others are measured in numerical number. So I just want to understand that. And then with regards to your last slide that you spoke to with regards to the fallen officers, I would just like to understand, of those in that number, your increased number, were they of those that were involved in organized crime?
Member Bosman.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to ask, on the targets of firearms lost, is the target for this financial year, was that 40 firearms, was that the aim, or is it not supposed to be zero firearms should be lost? Is that not supposed to be the target? And then I just wanted to ask what the working relationship is with the Western Cape Liquor Authority, and if there are any plans afoot to arrest the development of legal wholesalers selling liquor to illegal outlets, and what SAPS is doing, and perhaps maybe if we can get some of National's crime intelligence capacity to look into that specifically. And then my other question goes back to, again, maybe if the Brigadier, just in closing, could give me a better understanding of what happens once a crime is committed where forensic services are needed, whether that's fingerprinting, whether that's the collection of DNA or the identification of a body. Because one of the challenges that I face in some of the communities that we work is sometimes you have bodies lying there for hours with school kids walking past, and there's a lag between when that sort of white van arrives and the DNA and the integrity of the evidence is intact still. And now, sort of what the comment we got earlier was that it's a national competency and it's not managed from the province. So to what extent sort of do you have influence over how they respond, and also the quality of work that is produced, because that affects directly your crime statistics in terms of arrests made and crimes solved and versus cases prosecuted by the NPA, etc.
Member Kama?
Thank you very much, Chair. I must first also say that You know, I understand that when you have these targets, you want to see reduction. But you know, when you say you have a target of at least 5 dying, when you should have a zero, we know we are not in control, but it must not be your target.
Yeah.
But I understand that you would want to see a reduction. Now, the first question that I think it also links, sorry, Chair, to what I was saying now, as to how do we measure whether we are doing the work or not, because you know there is a reality, especially when it has to do with sexual offences. If you engage different communities, you would get there are people who are despondent, who are no longer reporting such crimes because they see the perpetrators who are in the communities, whether they report or not. So there is a large percentage of people who are like, I'm not going to report because there's nothing that is going to happen. Or I'm not going to report Mesuli Kama because we know Mesuli Kama has been killing people here and is still with us. Now, I want to check if what we use, because if I see in the presentation, we use the number of reported cases to measure if there is a reduction or not. And to me, that does not really say that there is a reduction or not. It can be that people are now suffering in silence. Now, I just want to get your reaction to that. And one other last question which I have, Chair, is I just want to get an understanding of now how do you police, especially as it relates to the judgment you were noting there. Now, before you read, when you were saying when you were talking about drugs, and I saw the reduction, immediately I thought that maybe Dhaka has an impact in the low number of cases that are reported. Now, I want to understand, because I know the judgment had said that the parliament must have there's a legislation process that is happening. But what I want to understand is, how do you police as in now? Because there's just different interpretation of the judgment, and you get even spaces where, you know, if you could take a walk one of these days, enter CBUT, Cape Town campus, just enter there, you see people smoking Dhaka like it's allowed, and in other spaces you even see police passing these people smoking the Dhaka. So as if there is an understanding that it's legal now and whatnot. So I just want to understand how do we police that. Thanks.
Member Christian,
Chair. So we're not going to do detectives. Are we not doing that? So we're just asking the questions. Are we done then?
Yes, and then we will...
That's what I wanted to get a feel for, where we will then set a date in order to invite the management back within the first quarter.
Because I've got a few questions that I can throw out on the detectives as well.
Okay, you are more than welcome to.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. Just because there was a lot mentioned about detectives, you know, in the political speeches, so I just want to understand... when it comes to detectives, our detectives, it seems, and I mean, I'm just taking it from the speeches that were made by MEC Fritz and Wendy, that it says that 45.8% of the Western Cape detectives did not receive basic training. And then it said, and I've got the sources, I mean, we've got, and then it says, while 90% had no specialized training. So that was, you can go check, it was July, they said at the end of 2017, MEC Fritz said this year, but it happened then. So 45.8% of the Western Cape detectives have not received basic training, and 90% have no specialized training. And then also the average of dockets should be 50 to 60 per detective, but our detectives are sitting at the average of 200 dockets. Is that, what is the norm? And so on. And just the other question, we know that, and I'm bringing the department in there, the court watching briefs, the one statement I read sometimes, you know, I'm just reading something that was said, there was, in Philippi there was 875 cases monitored, and only 380 just, the dockets did not just rock up at court at that specific time. So I can give the things that I have here on my phone, but I'm just saying that, you know, you have more than 440 arrests in the financial year, but when it comes to prosecution, there's a poor percentage of turnaround, and a lot is to do with the dockets not being handed in, a lot is to do with the investigation and all of that. So all the good work there, and then it does not materialize into people being prosecuted correctly and so on. So if you can just give us some details on that, thank you.
Brigadier, I'll hand over to you.
Same process applies. Will. Okay. In terms of the numerical targets, I think versus percentage, I think and we alive to that. What we are trying to do is where possible, because a percentage gives you a different picture to what a numerical target does. And I do concede it. So we've had a discussion. We are trying to now, where the target may be a percentage, we are trying to put a numerical figure to it. So we are attempting to do that, if that's acceptable. In terms of the nine that were killed, the eight on duty and off duty, and the one on duty, I have to verify the actual circumstances around the eight, but not to my knowledge were they involved in organized crime. It was incidental to that. The targets lost for firearms. Yeah, no, and I agree with you. It's debatable in terms of the target should be zero. I think what we've adopted an approach of, if I can call it, incremental targets. So we want to see reductions, but you're not going to see it necessarily overnight to zero. So I think if our previous provincial commissioner was here, he'd have said to you, see, I agree with the gentleman, and I don't agree with you, Brigadier Foscale, because he was also one that wanted to see a target of zero. My opinion survives. So we do incremental targets. It's just it allows the individual who's striving to reach that target. It gives him a ray of hope. Whereas if you are setting targets of zero, he's red till he leaves the service. He's going to have one or two, irrespective of whether it is. So it's an approach. It's not necessarily right or wrong. It's just a way of measuring which we've adopted. Come to that. With regard to the question of Mr. Christians, with regard to the figures, I don't want to say where the figures came from. I'm not aware of where the figures came from, because normally those have come through my office. So we have particular systems that generate that. So I am not going to indicate the percentages, because as far as I'm concerned, it's not what I would think is in my head. The last time I checked, and I manage that stuff personally, dockets to detective is roughly about 100, 101, definitely not anywhere near 200. But that's when I do a workload docket analysis of a system. So I'm not sure where the 200 and odd comes from. If it's a survey or sample of individuals, I couldn't say, because I don't really know the source of that information. So bear with me on that. So Dacha, so the Constitutional Court judgment indicated, and we've issued an instruction around that to try and clarify, because it was, I want to say confusing, but it sort of left everyone in a bit of a limbo. So we've issued provincial instruction with regard to that through our legal services, which has directed how members must deal with it. So, and there are still issues around the quantity. I can attest to that, because what is a quantity for personal usage? Maybe I smoke more than you. But so there are issues, and it may not be consumed in public. So there are issues around that. But obviously, it has impacted on the numbers. And that element of uncertainty has impacted on the numbers of arrests. Also, you'll see when if we were to have done the detection around possession of a crime dependent on police action, which is the possession of drug cases, you'll see there's been a decrease also in the number of convictions around that, because cases that were on the quarter for possession of small quantities, for the lack of knowing what those quantities are or constitute, those cases were struck off the quarter after the judgment. So you've seen in the conviction rate around those, there's been a decrease because there were no convictions on that, they were simply disposed of based on the Constitutional Court judgment. The number of reported cases and how we measure reduction, I concede. That is what we have. So we are unable, or we are not in a position to measure that which is not reported as the South African Police Service. So we simply measure that which is reported to us. And I do concede there are specific crimes, and even in specific communities where there may be under-reporting based on the type of offence, we concede that. But we are unable to work with anything that is not reported, so we simply work on reported figures. With regard to the ability of our when a crime is committed, how we deal with investigative aids, forensic evidence, of course. So the reality is, even though they are in our province, so they're line managers on. So they have, where we have a provincial commissioner, some of these units that you're referring to will have divisional commissioners that oversee them nationally. However, we work in a semi-military, quasi-military organization. There's still a rank structure, so they account in terms of day-to-day. They account nationally, they're responsible to the provincial commissioner. So they fall in line with everything else. They are on standby. They are called out to scenes. I think, I'm not sure in terms of where they're waiting for the white van. I don't think that's a police van. I think that's a pathology. I think that's the pathologist. And that's a national competence. Yes. But that white van you refer to where you're waiting for hours is in all probability the pathologist. Okay. So in essence, what should be happening is, I mean, there's a standby duty officer, we have members on duty, teams on duty in each area, be it FSL, be it your local criminal record center for your fingerprints, your DNA, etc., your forensic science laboratory, and they're supposed to be in a position to respond. And you have your duty officers or your senior officer that is at that scene that you then call them, and they're supposed to respond. I think there is I'm sure there's a standard time where those calls are logged, and they're supposed to respond within a particular period. Off the top of my head, I can't indicate if there is a standard time, but there should be one that which measures their response to particular scenes where they're called out to. Specialized basic training dockets. Legal wholesale is selling to illegal. I think this is something that we will respond to. I think that it is something which is a practice. And I think it has. I'm not sure if it's been dealt with or is being dealt with, but we can confirm that for you. Firearms lost. There was something I missed, sorry, Mr. Christian, around the 440 arrests.
Yeah. I said you have 440 arrests for financial year, but the detected, that's not, I said 45.8% of Western Cape detectives did not receive basic training, and then 90% have not received specialized training.
I think, thanks for that. I think perhaps let's, I prefer not to come, I need to see, because that would not be probably, I need to see the source of that, because I'm not sure the accuracy of that. So if that's a survey or a sample, it doesn't speak to the entire province. So I think we'd have to engage further on that if possible.
Yeah, but Christians, that would be the report that was tabled by the Department of Community Safety. Do you have, how many questions do we still have that need to be answered? Okay, this is the last time I will allow Member Bosman now, so.
I just wanted to ask Chair, there was a television program on Sunday on Carte Blanche and some media reports around 1 billion rand that SAPS nationally has given back to the National Prosecuting Authority, money that was appropriated to SAPS but wasn't spent. I just wanted to ask, in terms of this financial year, is any of that money from the Western Cape, has it been handed back?
I think I almost thought you were going to say trackers, but I think you're referring to the CJS budget.
Yeah,
CJS budget. That's where money has been basically allocated from the various proceeds of crime, and they recover that kind of funding, and then they allocate it back into particular environments within law enforcement, the broader law enforcement. The CJS budget, it's not something which is a provincial competency. It's managed nationally. So I wouldn't be in a position to answer you with regard to that with the CJS budget. But definitely nothing from the province, because it's managed nationally from the old FAR was dealing specifically with the CJS budget.
Members, we have said our deliberation for between 2 and 5. We will now end today's engagement, and we will, after resolve regarding the possible dates, which will be early February, and we do pay tribute to those that have sadly lost their lives. But I'm going to allow Member Christians to do the official thanks for you being here, and he might sing for you, sir. But then we will conclude, and the thanks will also go out to the department and the ombudsman. Thank you, Member Christians.
Thank you, Chairperson, for that. Thank you, Foskill, for the presentation and the team. I know it's not always easy, and we are glad that you could answer what you could. What you could not answer, we will then ask in writing. But I think we know that the police is only one component of fighting crime. There's other departments, there's people, but we really do honor you, and you must bestow our gratitude to your people, to say thank you for keeping us safe. And we know that police is only, like I said, one aspect of fighting crime. We're all in this together because we want to see a greater and safer communities. We are worried about safety, and we are worried about what's happening. But I think the time for pointing fingers has passed. We must take responsibility. So the little we can do, we must do. And that will make your job easier. So thank you, Ombudsman, for being here, the department for being here. And we're all in this together to make to see a better Western Cape and South Africa. So we hope, Brigadier, that you go home and spend some time now with your loved ones, a few hours. I always say, it's always about memories. So the time that you have left, go spend it with your loved ones. And I cannot sing, but I think we as a committee can sing. Chairperson, as a committee, we can sing. We can sing as a committee.
You can answer. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. God bless you today. God bless you always. God bless you and keep you. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you.
As per member president, thank you so much. We will then further our break of during the next 5 minutes regarding February. There is no refreshments outside. Members, we will then take our action steps and resolutions moving forward. One announcement regarding tomorrow's meeting, which is scheduled. Yes, Member Barnes, tomorrow there is a meeting. Yes. As I stated earlier on, the report has been tabled. Unlike the departments, the SEPS one is slightly different, so we are still able to invite them back. We have three possible dates for 5, 6, and 7 February. Is there... The seven. Okay. Yes, that is in the committee. That's a committee day. The seventh day. Or fifth. Is it listed as a committee day?
Yeah. Chair, you're supposed either 5th, 6th or 7th. Right? Now on the 5th is that waves of change invitation that we have received. And I think it's a possible combined education, sports and health and social development, because they are funding. Social development is funding. So the, and I'm not sure what was the date for that. I mean the time. The 1 to 4.
The request has gone through for 1 to 4, but members can change that as well.
So on the program for next year,
the 7th
is only reserved for petition.
Yeah, so make it the 6th and not the Friday.
And it's
a
sitting
meeting. Yeah.
Can't combine it with the ways of change thing.
Sorry, members, the Cluster B members will be away on the visit week. So I think that's why the Thursday has been included for. I spoke on the connection, but I think. It does say Cluster Lanesburg Municipality. I think they're going that side of the world. So the only reason is that we should actually bounce now before other chairpersons who might not be present. Okay.
So then we will, Member Christians? 5 Feb, we will then invite SEPs.
Okay.
And then we will via email even send the agenda so it'll be on point for it.
Are we going to get the PowerPoint presentation before?
I must also say thank you for not walking out earlier on, because it was literally printed yesterday. And we wanted him to have the first engagement. So thank you, Member Bosman. Especially Member Bosman. But thank you. Members, we will then see you tomorrow, and we will also adopt minutes tomorrow. Thank you so much.
Oh, I hand over to the
committee. Members, the committee requests the following information for the year under review 2018-19. A list of the number of incident reports of poor management. The number of bullet resistant vests that have been reported lost and or stolen, an update on the processes undertaken against the 37 fraud and corruption cases, or rather with regard to the 37 fraud and corruption cases, and a breakdown of the nature of the 24 dishonorable discharges.
Chair, can I just add?
Yes.
You didn't answer me on the 45.8% of Western Cape detectives that did not receive basic training, and the 90% that have no specialized training, and you also didn't answer the one about the under-resourcing of this province. I would like also that he gives us a proper figure, and also the docket ratio is also, he's wrong with 100. So can we just get the docket ratio per detective so that we know what's happening? So those four things, thank you, Chair.
Member Bosman?
May I also just ask for more information, perhaps this information needs to come from the National Commissioner's Office, on the forensic laboratory in the Western Cape being a national competency, and I'd like to understand, perhaps they can give us more detail in how that competency is managed. If I understood the answer that I was given correctly, it is that they are the divisional command commissioners who oversee the forensic services, but because they have a quasi-military system, they are accountable to the provincial police commissioner as well. So we just need to understand how that works, because what I'm particularly interested in is how do they monitor success rates in terms of what forensic services work on and what actually gets prosecuted in a court of law. So we can get some information on that. And then also, if we can get the question that I asked around the 24 dishonorable discharge police officers, just some more information on the detail on that and what that meant. And then if they have updated financial statements, perhaps a little bit more detail than just the summary that we have in this report. So if this budget of just over 715 million is for goods and services rendered and doesn't cover personnel costs, can we get a breakdown of what that is, perhaps a little bit more detail, maybe the second, third, and fourth layer